Miriam Meets on RTE Radio 1 with Miriam O'Callaghan.
My guests this morning are best friends. Lisa Hannigan is a renowned singer-songwriter whose second album, Passenger, was released to critical acclaim last year. She's been touring for much of this year and plays the Lisard Festival in Skibbereen on August the 4th before departing for the wider world. Una Molloy is her very best friend and tour manager. Since first meeting a decade ago, they have worked together, travelled together and shared a flat together. So it's hardly surprising that I'm meeting them together this morning. You're both really welcome.
Morning.
Morning.
Can you remember where you first met each other?
I'll feel this one. I saw Una in Whelan's quite a bit because I was in there doing gigs with Damien at that point. And I always sort of saw her. She was working behind the bar and I saw her and I thought she looked really nice. And I was actually just really shy and sort of would sort of say hello, bits and bobs, but didn't start a big conversation. And then I was asked to paint the shutter of Whelan's. Whelan's used to have this shutter before they expanded and where people would paint like the front of their record or like advertise their gig, that kind of thing, wasn't it? Yeah. And I just kind of thought, maybe I'll ask that girl, does she want to help me paint it? Because Damien said, you do it because I don't have time. So I don't even know why I did. I don't know why I asked, why I was brave suddenly to ask you. But I just went into the bar and just asked whether she'd like to do it with me at the weekend, and she said, yeah, sure, okay. And it was mad, and so I turned up with my paintbrushes and my pots, and we started and we painted a little bit, and we just were chatting, and every few every hour or so we'd sort of zip into Whelan's and have a tea and a tequila.
Oh, great.
That was my rule.
Yeah, that was your first suggestion. But then once you ordered it first, it became quite easy to order it after that. And we just had a weekend of having tea and tequila and painting this shutter, which was quite difficult, and just talking and, talking about boys and music and life and what we were into,
Swapping life stories. I think it was kind of a weird situation because we were sort of young girls hanging out.
How old would you have both been about then? About 19 or something? Yeah.
You'd be 19, I would have been 20.
Yeah.
21?
No.
Young.
Young, very young. Yeah. And just sort of brand new into the world, really. And and brand new into a world that was full of older people. We were kind of surrounded by people in their late 20s or early 30s. So I think we kind of had that in common. It was unusual. We were sort of bravely pretending to be a little bit older than we were.
And were you surprised when she asked you to come and help her paint the shutter in Whelan's?
Yeah, actually, to amend that story a little bit, she phoned me and I woke up to the phone ringing. I woke up on the couch of a party in Rathmines and answered the phone and said, hello, this is Lisa Hannigan. And I said, okay. And she said, I have to paint a shutter outside Whelan's. Would you like to do it? And I was kind of,
That's so mad.
And I arrived down. It was the same day I arrived down because I hadn't got any clothes with me. And you had a green shirt and a scarf
I
wrapped around myself. And we just went on and painted. And I think it was like for every 5 stripes, we had to go in and have a cup of tea and a tequila, which, loosened the tongues.
Yeah, and loosened the old painting skills as well by the end. Yeah. Definitely towards the top of the shutter, things started going a little askew. Yeah,
how did the shutter lines turn out in the end?
It was quite difficult.
It wasn't the best shutter that was ever outside.
No, it was the cover of Damien's record, Oh, which was
Damien Rice, just for people.
Yeah, it was mostly cream with these two little figures on it. So they were kind of stick figures. So, we got away with it.
I did the cream. I did the background and Lisa did the actual line drawing, luckily, for the drawing.
Isn't that mad how differently you can remember it? I must have constructed this memory of walking into Whelan's, and sort of saying, excuse me.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's mad.
And was it from there your great friendship began?
Yeah, we haven't really left each other's side ever since, to be honest. We've been sort of joined at the hip.
We moved in together reasonably soon after that. We were both looking for a flat and moved in, and then we've lived together for the last pretty much 10 years, I'd say.
Until last year.
Until just recently when our housemate Bueno moved out, and we have just been on tour so much that we thought, let's just move all of our stuff home and then go on tour, which is what we've pretty much done ever since. But I do miss you.
Ah, and I'm going to find out about who's the domestic goddess, if there is one within the relationship. But the lovely thing this morning is, Lisa, you are going to sing live for us.
I am.
Your beautiful songs with your magnificent voice. The first one is Passenger. Tell me about that. And you wrote it for Una.
We were on this really, really cold American tour, a February tour, and I spent an awful lot of the time trying to figure a particular situation out in my head. And I call Una Bird. She calls me Bird. And so
why do you both call each other Bird?
I don't know. We just started calling each other, hey Bird, you know.
Yeah. I think it came from when we were in Whelan's, people would say, where's your bird? You know, because we were together so much, they'd say, where's your bird? And
did they think you were gay?
No. Nothing that intriguing.
No, I mean, occasionally people have asked, but I think just Bird. we were always together.
Just best pals, you know. Yeah.
So in the song, there's a part of the song is, she says Bird, why? I say Bird, why? And it's just, you know, that's kind of our relationship on tour as well, as apart from working really hard, you know, there's that trying to figure things out together as well, and a lot of chatting. We still, you know, chat over tea and tequila as often as we can.
It's really lovely, I always think, though, to have a song written for you or a poem written for you. Was it special for you, you know, that she did write this song for you?
Yeah, I didn't know that she had. But,
did you know?
Yeah, no, of course, it's really special.
And I mean, there's loads of references to Una actually in both of my records, but that's just because, you know, she's such an important part of my life as well. And you know, songs are sort of, one of my songs anyway, are sort of written from personal experience. So that is so tied up with Una that, she pops up all over the show.
Oh, well, look, you're going to go over and play that. And there's a mandolin in this?
Yes. Well? Yeah, I'm just going to play it on the mandolin. Okay, so this one is called Passenger.
Chicago, I have smuggled you as cargo, though you are far away, unknowing. By the time we get to Salt Lake, I have packed you in my suitcase, high in the creases from my own remembering.
It's beautiful. Come back over. That's a gorgeous song.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Cheers.
You listen to these songs all the time as her tour manager, Una.
I do.
So be honest, you kept Bird listening.
No, not at all. I never do. Yeah. I never, ever do, which is really unusual because I've tour managed other people and you stop watching the show. But with Lisa, you know, I always enjoy going out and watching that. I'd watch them all, I think.
Thanks, Bird.
Looking Bird.
You never know. You never know what I'm going to crowd surf or, you know.
Yeah, it just gets so intense.
Getting the nip or anything. So, you know.
Do you test any or most of your songs on Una? Like when you're writing a song, would you test?
Yeah. Yeah, Una would be the first person that I would play a tune for, definitely.
What a
privilege. Or even like a couplet,
it
you
is.
Know. I would play to you first. But I feel, I guess it's because I feel safe with Una, whereas I think that with anybody else, it's very, you know, they're looking up your skirt a bit.
You're very personal.
Yeah, you know, I could say anything to Una, and I could play anything for Una. So
there's certain times where you hear a song that Lisa sings, and it's even more perfectly formed than other songs, you know, and that you might get more excited about. Like, for example, Lisa wrote a song called Home, and I remember. Yeah. The first time she played it, she was like, come up to my room, I've got a new song. And we were sitting on the bed and she played it. And it was just such a beautiful, already formed, fully amazing song that I remember being really excited about it. And
it's a stunning song. Was that inspired by Skippy Dyes?
Yeah.
Paul's book, yeah.
I love that book. I started writing it and about that sort of age of being sort of 14, 15 and the feeling of being that age and sort of how kind of exciting and frustrating and confusing and everything that it is. And then I started reading Skippy Dyes, which, you know, was the perfect accompaniment. And it was really, really helpful because he creates such an incredible atmosphere in that book that it really, really helped me to finish the song. And you were reading it as well. Yeah, I absolutely love that book.
Were you a happy 14, 15-year-old?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, as much as you can be. And, you know, I think it is a really difficult time. and you do struggle with a lot of things. Even when you're fine, it's difficult. I think just as a time in your life, it's a difficult time.
You, Una, what were you like as a 14 or 15 year
old? I think I was quite nerdy until I was about 15, and then sort of ventured out into the world a little bit more. But I was quite quiet and introverted up until about third year, I think, in school.
It is just a tough time.
You're 12 or you're 11 and you're trying to figure out how to make friends, you know.
Yeah. Tell me about both your backgrounds. Where did you grow up, Una? Tell me about your family.
I grew up in Rathfarnham. Both my parents are teachers and are amazing. They have 9 kids. My dad is from... His dad was sergeant of Rathfarnham Garda Station, so he's...
Wow, steeped in Rathfarnham.
Yeah. He's been around for a while. His dad's a Galway man and my mum's from Tipperary.
Where did your parents meet, do you know?
In the teacher training college. I think my dad was in the Brothers and then...
Really?
Yeah.
A Christian brother?
Yeah.
And he lost his heart to your mother?
I think he just realised that, you know, girls were more important than being a Christian brother, possibly. No, I don't know. I think he just realised it wasn't for him. I better not say that, it would be cross with me.
Oh, no.
Luckily for me, he realised it wasn't for him.
Where do you come in the 9?
I'm 7th.
Do you mind growing up in a big family? Would you have liked to have been like an only child or a small?
No, I love it. Absolutely love it. Especially now. Yeah. As an adult, it's the most precious thing that's ever been given to me, I think, you know, like by my parents. Is when you think about all the sacrifices and, you know, my sister has just had a baby and you sort of notice what a massive thing it is and what, you know, the ordeal and the worrying and the drama. And I'm continually baffled by how my parents pulled it off. But
it would have been pretty funny if you'd said, yes, I'd like
to. Couldn't have made it home at all. Yeah.
What about you, Lisa? Where did you grow up in your family?
I grew up in the countryside in Meath, just on the sort of Meath-Kildare border. And I've one older brother. And it was a very sort of country upbringing, which was great. And there was a few kids on our lane, but not a big gang like you would have a big gang.
Although, make a lot of jokes about Lisa and the lane.
Why?
Lisa and her friend Badger. And her turf toys.
These city mice, you know, because the rest of the band are all city mice. So I'm, you know, I'm there talking about growing up in hay barns with my friend Badger. But, a lot of my time was spent in hay barns, which was fantastic, you know, and I think it's sort of fostered my imagination, I guess, at a young age. Though we did, you know, roam around on our bikes and have little gangs and things as well, but a lot of it was spent out in the garden. My mum's a very, an incredible gardener and grows all of her own vegetables and, you know, is fairly self-sufficient. And so that was a big part of childhood as well, you know, of being out in the garden. So that was really nice.
And when you were young, were you writing lyrics then? And was there a lot of music in your house? Where did that all come from?
My parents listened to a lot of music, but we didn't play music. You know, we didn't sort of sit around and play tunes or anything. But both my parents can sing. My dad was really into Irish music and blues music. And my mum was really into singer-songwriter. So it was kind of, I had a very good kind of mix of things. Mm. So I was always kind of singing and dancing and making up little songs, but I didn't have any notebooks, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I certainly hope not. Anyway, that would be quite frightening to find at this stage. Who knows? International smash hits in there. I don't know.
But we were. Were you classically trained at one stage?
I was mad into Michael Jackson. That's all I listened to for years and loved sort of Kylie and all that stuff. Went through that phase. And then at some point my mum brought home this... it was a compilation CD of operatic arias or something. Mm. And I guess I would have been maybe 12, I think. And it was all I listened to for years. I just got mad into opera. And it was all I listened to. And it's actually a really good thing, I think, to listen to as a teenager, you know, when you're full of feelings and angst and you know, it's really emotional, dramatic music, and it really, you know, I would just sit in my room and sing along to Maria Callas and, you know, cry into my pillow.
Yeah, because we're actually going to take, as well as you playing for us and singing for us this morning, you're both also choosing some music, and we are going to play a piece of Maria Callas. Which piece is this? And I always think her voice is so
beautifully
so
sad.
So heartbreaking. Yeah, she really, I mean, she was one of the first singers, apart from Nina Simone, that I heard that I really connected to emotionally, and that she, that was her incredible gift. Because some people say they don't actually like the sound of her voice particularly, you know, the actual timbre of her voice is quite shrill. And I just think it's just so beautifully emotional. Yeah. And she really just transmitted so much through her voice, just amazing. So the piece I picked was my absolute favourite. This was my favourite room sing-along one. And it's a song called Casta Diva from the opera Norma by Bellini. And she is a high priestess singing to her people.
Maria Callas there singing Casta Diva from Norma by Bellini. That's just so beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Amazing. It's unusual though for a young girl, maybe about 14, to sit in your bedroom listening to that.
Yeah, it all was. Yeah. It was weird. And you know, I was the only one of my friends that did it, and they were all into other things.
Is it because you wanted to be an opera singer?
I didn't before I heard Maria Callas.
Yeah.
But I got so into it that it just seemed like the only thing that I wanted to do. I mean, I always wanted to sing, but then I found this type of music that I really wanted to sing. You know, a few years later, I realised that that isn't my voice. You know, it's a very particular colour of voice that is that way. And you can sort of put on an accent, you know, and sort of pretend like you're doing it. But it wasn't my voice. And actually, at that time, I started listening to Nirvana, and I heard some Kristen Hirsch, who's a singer-songwriter, a woman in the Throwing Muses. You know, she's obviously so incredibly different to Maria Callas, but she sort of had that same emotional transmission that I found in Maria Callas, and I completely just fell in love with Kristen Hirsch, and then that's all I listened to for all or nothing, really. But I seemed to miss out on all like that, take that, and you know, all that kind of stuff, because I was just taken up with something else.
So you weren't disappointed in the end that you couldn't be an opera singer, or you felt you wouldn't make it as an opera singer?
I mourned it for a while, you know. I mourned it for about a year, and then I just got on with it. But it was hard to let go, you know. It was really, really, it was a really big deal in my head.
Do you still privately, if you're in the shower, sing a bit of opera?
Yeah. Or I'll find poor Ingrid had to listen to a lot of me singing in the shower, I'm afraid.
It's better than listening to you learn how to play violin.
Yeah, I took up the violin about a year ago. That did not go down well at all.
Did not. No, the singing was better.
Yeah.
But interestingly, it was through opera, weren't you? Was it in the Fashkill you were doing a duet, which is originally where Damien Rice saw you?
Well, I had met him a good few months before, first day of Freshers Week, I bumped into him. And so we bumped into each other a few times, and we became kind of friends. And then at some point he said, oh, I've got this song. I'm a musician, but I didn't even know. Because he was in this band Juniper, but I didn't know that all went over my head because he wasn't Maria Callas. yeah, completely. And so I said, oh, I can sing. I'll be a singer song. And he said, well, when can I hear you sing? And I really stupidly said, oh, I'm doing this Fashkill thing next week with my friend. And I was singing that flower duet from Delibes' Lakme, otherwise known as the British Airways ad.
What way does it go?
That one. And I invited him to it, and he turned up with his girlfriend, and there was maybe seven people in the hall, and I thought, oh God, this isn't going to go well.
Retreat.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, put your singer-songwriter ears on this. You know, this is not going to go my way. But afterwards, he came up and he said he really liked the sound of my voice, even though I was, you know, putting on that accent that we were talking about earlier. And so I said, oh, all right then. And he said, come over to my house. And so I started going around to his house, and we started with this song, Cold Water, and then, you know, I just kind of muscled my way in and ended up, you know, we just started doing shows, and then we made the record, which took a few years. And subsequent to that, I met Una and everything. But we, you know, took a couple of years to make the record, and then we were kind of gone. It was weird. We toured for a bit, and then it just sort of took off, and I had to leave college because we had so many gigs, and it was just amazing.
Interestingly, you both, did you drop out of college? You tell me about, you went to college as well, didn't you?
I did. I went to DLIADT in Dunleary, and I studied. Studied is probably the wrong word, but the course was called English Media Studies and Cultural Studies, and I made it through up until the second year, and then I became ENTS officer and promised my parents that I'd go back after I was ENTS officer and never darkened its doors again.
But ENTS officer is exactly now what you're doing.
Yeah, your preparation for what you are now. But listen, your parents are both teachers. Were they upset you dropped out?
They were upset, but they didn't kill me. And they were very disappointed, but they are very good at letting us make our own decisions most of the time. But, you know, it all worked out for the... It was okay in the end.
You play the clarinet, like you're a performer yourself, aren't you?
No.
You used to play the clarinet.
I have a clarinet.
It has to be 5 in the morning.
Okay.
And, you can just about make you play a song.
My dad was the co-founder of the Rathfarnham Concert Band, so he encouraged all of us to play a musical instrument. So everybody in the family plays one, but I just didn't have... I was not naturally talented in that area, but I could, you know, I could read music and I do competitions
and band camp. Una actually went to band camp.
What's band camp?
It's
sounds good.
I thought it was like just a cliche, you know, from American films, but like, go on, actual band camp.
Band camp is a joke in the band because it's supposed to be the most boring story from childhood ever. But I actually went to band camp. It was an amazing weekend where the concert band used to go away and rehearse together for 4 days in Gormanstown College, and we'd all stay there.
I imagine it's kind of like Dirty Dancing.
You are wrong.
Don't disabuse me of my notions.
But you can keep thinking that though. No, it was amazing fun. We had amazing times, but just music and stage and performance is just not, it's not for me at all. So, but my brother plays trumpet with Lisa, and he came from the same background, but just, was better than me. I don't like it. For a little while, Lisa used to make me get up on stage and play the stylophone for one of the tracks, and I just got it wrong every time.
It's not that you got it wrong, but you just dreaded it. You know, you could see, you just, it was like this weight that sort of hung over the whole evening, and then once done, you could relax, and it just seemed like.
Why do some people find it easier to perform? I mean, you're meant to be quite a shy person, Lisa, yet you find performing okay, and yet you don't like performing.
There's definitely a certain amount of, you know, you have to be naturally talented, which I'm not. And then there's also the whole idea that you have to gather the experience and gather the momentum. Like, I remember Lisa's first show, she didn't say any words at all to the audience. Yeah. It was in Cypress Avenue, and she came on stage and sang all her songs and then came off stage. And that was it.
I couldn't even say hello. It was terrifying.
But it was, it was still amazing because the music was amazing.
Was that your kind of first gig after you split from Damien Rice?
Yeah.
Were you terrified? Were
totally.
You?
Totally. Yeah, I was totally terrified because when I left that band, I came home and myself and Una went for lunch, boozy lunch, and with a notebook. And I was like, what am I going to do? I knew that I wanted to make a record, but I needed Una to help me translate my vague ideas of what I wanted to do into getting stuff done and actually at the end of a year having a record in my hand, you know.
You know, like, it was such a vast project that I think we just took it all apart and put it into little boxes and then filled every box with a separate list and then ticked off the list one by one.
And had a plan for each tiny box, you know, be it artwork or videos or getting a band together or songs, arranging them. You know, it was just such a huge, vast world that I had always sort of seen from, you know, obliquely, sort of from the side. And suddenly, you know, I had to drive it and I had to, you know, I had to steer and I'd probably still be making my first record if we didn't have our amazing lunches.
Could you have done it without Una?
I don't think so.
She could, of course. If
I probably would still be shuffling around, to be honest.
No,
you know?
I think the relationship that Lisa and I have definitely is like two, it feels like two Lego pieces where the bits that I'm rubbish at, that Lisa's very good at, and vice versa. You know, that we're sort of good for each other in terms of the bits that I'm lacking in confidence, she builds me up and vice versa.
Well, that's what I mean, you know, without you, I'd be sort of a little single Lego piece, just, you know, you can't make a house out of it.
And your mother's a great organiser, isn't she, Una? So do you get those organisational skills from your mum and your dad?
I'd say that's from my mum. Yeah, I get my confidence from my dad.
Great.
But yeah, my mum is super, she's a special needs teacher in a school in Churchtown, and she just has, you know, boxes and labels and files and, you know, of just stuff.
Organised.
Yeah.
But like mother of nine, you have to, I mean, if you're not organised, surely everything would just, I mean, you know.
I'm not organised. But look, we're going to take the next piece of music, which you're going to play live for us, which is Little Bird.
Yes.
Tell me about this song.
I wrote this song in myself and Una's kitchen, I'd say about a year and a half ago. And it was actually quite hard to write. It was the most sort of emotionally difficult song to write, but it's actually my favourite one now, off the record. A lot of the time I'm sort of a bit nervous about it, and I play something and I kind of go, oh, I don't like that bit, as I'm playing it for Una, because I'm sort of listening to it through her ears. But I remember with this song feeling really solid about it. I only wrote it in an evening. It sort of happened all quite quickly. And I remember playing it to her with sort of with confidence, you know, quite early on.
Why was it emotionally difficult?
I had made a conscious decision that I wanted to be really honest with when I was writing for this record in particular. I think for the first record, I was trying to appear a certain way to myself, maybe. And this one, I didn't really care. And I was just trying to be honest about how I felt about a situation.
Was it about the breakup of a relationship?
Of sorts, yeah.
Is it private?
Sorry. I always just feel silly talking about songs because things resonate with you because of things in your own life. And then when somebody says, oh, it's about this thing that happened, it's sort of, I don't know, it just kind of laminates it or something, and then you can't get in.
Sort of so, breaks the spell, you know, to talk about what a song is about.
Yeah, sometimes I hear like that, you know, been the two of us need, this beautiful, beautiful Michael Jackson song. It was about his pet rat. And you think, oh dear.
All right, then. Ruined.
Okay, listen, you're going to go over now and play Little Bird. That's another gorgeous song.
That's one of my favourite songs on the record as well. You know, everybody can take something from a song that's that honest.
I think the more specific you are in a song, the more universal things seem. Like those songs where people are singing sort of cliches of like, set me free, I love you so much. It doesn't mean anything to anyone, you know. Whereas if you're at that time, I saw you in the kitchen, you know, people go, oh, yeah.
I remember.
You know,
you remember
sorry, that sounds really cynical, but I do think that's really true. Like you have to be specific with yourself in order to mean anything to anyone else.
We're going to take a piece of music now, your choice, Una, which is Talking Heads.
Yeah, we've just had so many wild parties in our house where this song would be played at some point in the evening, and I just see, you know, six friends dancing around singing it, and just the lyrics are so beautiful and they're so relevant to a lot of people's lives, I suppose, that it really strikes a chord with me and all of our friends.
What's the name of the Talking Head song?
It's called This Must Be the Place, Naive Melody.
Talking Heads there, this must be the place, your choice, Una. But you both love it, actually, I can see that.
Yeah, singing along there. We had a great gig in the Ivy Gardens there last weekend. Yeah. I sang that song with Paul Noonan from Bell X1 because we thought it would be nice to do a cover, a nice kind of upbeat cover. And that was the first song that we thought of. You know, it's just
fantastic.
Such a wonderful, such a wonderful tune.
You tour together all the time. Do you ever fight?
No. No, we share a room. I'm kind of a morning person and Una's a night person, but it's actually fine because we both, you know, I just kind of go to sleep while Una's tapping away on her computer at night and she tries to stay asleep while I wake up and make coffee in the morning.
So who's the domestic goddess in the domestic arrangements when you live together for years? Or was there one?
Definitely Lisa, without a doubt. And definitely not me, unfortunately.
Ah, that's not true. That's not true. But I mean, I had a couple of years ahead of you as well, you know, in terms of being old, a couple of years ahead of you.
Were you a good cook?
I like to, yeah, I like.
She's
I like
an
to
amazing cook. Oh, an absolutely
cook.
Incredible cook, as is your mother as well.
Yeah, my mum's an incredible cook. Yeah, well, she puts me to shame, really. But I try to learn. I try to learn from her as much as I can.
How are your love lives?
Good. I've got a very nice boy.
Who?
His name is Donald Gunn, and everything is great.
In the business?
Yeah, he's in a band called Toucan. He's an amazing guitar player, and they do
incredible guitar player.
And your love life, Lisa? Single or not?
Nothing to speak of, really.
So you're free and available.
Yes.
As you head to the Lissard Festival this weekend, next weekend.
If only it was just doing part of it.
As two women in the music business, is it a friendly place for women?
We make it as friendly as we can from our point of view. You know, you can only really control how you deal with people.
Do you think it's different? It probably sounds such a sexist question, but is it different for women in the business?
It's different as well, I think, from artists to production. The company that I have is a production company where we put together shows and...
What's it called?
Turning Pirate. And, you know, book tours for bands. And in Ireland, it's kind of okay because you build up a relationship with people and people know who you are. But then once we're outside of Ireland, on the road with Lisa, it's amazing most of the time. But then there is the odd time where people assume if you're a lady with the band that, you know, you're the guitar player's girlfriend. You kind of have to develop a look about you that you know what you're doing.
What is that look? But you have that look. You know, you walk into a room and you're like, that's the person that knows what the answer to the question is. But that's your whole thing.
You have to develop that look in order to be taken seriously.
The way it's worked out, you know, sometimes we'll have a meeting between the kind of the key people that I sort of work with. Mm. And it's all women, madly enough. And, you know, I feel very fortunate to sort of have worked out that way. I mean, they're the best people for the job, you know.
Yeah. Do you love being on the road?
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is to do with sharing a room with Una, you know, so I feel like, you know, we feel kind of like we're on our holidays, even when we're working really hard. We try and make it as much as enjoyable as we possibly can all the time.
Do you write songs as we come to a close now on a daily basis? What's your kind of discipline in songwriting?
I don't have as much discipline as I would like to have. That's my problem. I try to write as often as I can. I try to do a bit every day. Or I mean, I certainly always have a few songs on the go in my head. It's not that I would necessarily write things down every day. But I'm looking forward to sort of having a bit of time now in August to kind of try and write some tunes because, yeah, it makes me happy.
But we're going to end on a piece of music, which is another of your songs, Lisa, which is Leal.
Yeah, this song was off my first record, CISO, and it's one of my favourite songs that I've written that I actually feel, I still love playing it, you know, and it was my favourite song off that record, and it just reminds me of a really beautiful time in our lives when, you know, when we first started doing shows. It was like the peg that those shows were hung on for me, and those shows were like the peg that my career thus far has been hung on, so...
It's a beautiful song, actually. Lisa Hannigan, Una Molloy, thanks a million. I know you're heading to Skibbereen next weekend down to the Lissard Festival.
Yeah, can't wait.
It's going to be lovely.
What day is it on?
Saturday.
Saturday and Sunday, but Lisa's playing on Saturday.
Brilliant. Well, I hope it goes brilliantly for you. Thanks a million for being my guest today.
Thanks a lot.
Best of luck in the future. My thanks on sound today to Mark Dwyer, to my producer Eileen Herron, and now Lisa Hannigan's going to sing Leal.
say when he's asked what he done in the past to someone.
Miriam Meets on RTE Radio 1. Listen back or podcast at rte.ie/radioplayer.